Welcome to the Completely Unnecessary Podcast for, oh my God, the dog days of summer, August 2nd, 2022, officially the dog days. That's Ian Ferguson at a remote location. I'm Pat Contry at Castle Contry. On the show today, we'll be discussing lots of fun stuff. Night trap NFTs. What? we'll be talking about Analog Pocket update 1.1.
Update.
Polymega actually tweeting stuff out. Tommy Tallarico versus Roblox, and much more. Ian, we discussed car stuff that happened this, over the past week on the exclusive Patreon CU podcast, patreon.com/CU podcast. It was the CU CarCast. Talking about
learn a little bit about smog checks.
Yeah, smog checks. Smog checks and you. Yeah, we talked about that. But otherwise, what's going on? I've been catching up on Better Call Saul, finally. I finally watched the damn show, and it's amazing.
Nice. I want to point out first is I have the background blurred. But between right here, my headphones, there's little windows into the soul. You can see my records behind. Like
It's part of your head.
Yeah,
the software says it's part of your head.
No, I didn't really do a whole lot this weekend. I sat around. I did not want to be stuck inside. It's been kind of warm out. It's been getting warmer, and I can't cool down the apartment as efficiently. I didn't do a whole lot. I played more Jupiter Hell, which I've brought up before. It's essentially the Doom roguelike. That's really fun. I kind of just played games and read books and tried to pass the time. Couldn't focus on any TV.
Why are you remote, Ian?
I have COVID. I got COVID from San Diego Comic-Con. Honestly, I feel pretty fine. I would not have tested if I had not gotten a phone alert telling me to test, because I just didn't feel, noticeably bad.
I didn't get a phone alert. I guess they realized where people were. They track people
You gotta opt into it. If you don't opt into it, then you don't get an alert.
Was it the Clear app or was it something else?
No, I didn't use the Clear app. No, it's something literally on your iPhone that you can opt into that will give you tracking alerts.
I didn't know that. Oh, okay. Yeah. For any COVID.
I honestly don't know where it is. I did it early. Like we're talking May 2020, I did this, so I'm not sure anymore where it is. So I'm fine. I actually tested negative this morning, but that was like 20 minutes after I'd usually be there, and better play it safe than sorry. But I'm out of the woods.
I don't need some eating germs on me. That's okay.
Who does?
We still have your cute face here. By the way, is that white lump over your left shoulder? Is that spike laying down?
I wish it was.
It's just a white lump.
So it's the garbage can we put our recycling in. So another reason why I have the background blurred.
You have yet to upgrade to the simple human experience in the ecosystem?
No, I do have a simple human trash can, my normal trash can.
Oh, you don't do the double like me?
$100 on a fucking trash can for the recycling.
No. I have the dual. It's the last trash can you'll ever need.
I looked for the dual.
You couldn't find it?
It makes sense. People always think, you need more trash can space. If you're not emptying your trash once a day, I don't know what you're doing. Trash
once stinks. A day?
Trash stinks. Well, what's I that? Cook a lot.
Okay. I'd say once every 3 days if for two people, because I do mine about once a week for me. It takes a while to fill it up. Wow.
I can't have food scraps in my trash can rotting.
Oh, okay. Oh, you don't have a little garbage disposal in your sink? Okay, I put something there in a lot.
We do when we use it, but still.
Okay.
I eat a lot of yogurt. You throw out yogurt containers. Those get gross.
Wash them out. You put them in the recycling thing.
Yeah, I do. They're still, I don't know. What?
If you wash them out, there should be a lot of bacteria in there. That's a good bacteria. That's our friends.
Gut health.
It's friendly. It's friendly bacteria.
It's good for our stomach flora and fauna.
Spiders and bacteria are very underrated for helping us out.
I've really become like a spider fan in recent years.
I don't kill them. I honestly try to like get them out of the house in a cup.
There was a I got into the shower once and I was like halfway through the shower and I looked over to my right and there was a pretty large guy there and I took a couple deep breaths and I was like, we're gonna try to coexist, and we did.
How big was on that? Like, it was like a silver dollar size.
About that big. Yeah.
Okay. Or, as
long as maybe about 50-cent piece.
That's still pretty. A 50-cent piece is bigger than a silver dollar, I think, isn't it?
No.
The Susan B. Anthony's are smaller than a Kennedy.
Well, let's say it's a Susan B. Anthony size. Those are roughly a quarter size.
That's still sizable. That's the head size or with the legs? That's got to be with the legs.
We're talking with the legs like this.
Okay. If that was just the head, okay, we're in like some South American jungle.
Wasn't like a huntsman spider from Australia or anything like that.
Like a tarantula that they actually hunt and eat in some parts of the world. They actually do. They actually eat them. They roast them up and eat them. I saw that in one of the guy who passed away. He went somewhere.
Anthony Bourdain.
Anthony Bourdain. He went somewhere and they were roasting him. Like, let's find a spider hole and find a huge tarantula and we'll roast them up. And I'm like, I don't know. What's my levels?
Hey, strokes.
No, I'm just saying, it's not my culture. What's the level of starvation I had to be at to eat that? I'm trying to think, like, what is that? 2 weeks of starvation? Is that a week and a half? Like, what level is it? Do I have to eat a tarantula like that?
Yeah, I'm just a little squeamish on that.
Real quick, check out our buddy Norm, the gaming historian, has a new video out. It's the Nintendo games that were on Atari. So, like, all the pre-NES Nintendo games in North America. So check that out. Support our buddy Norm. Like and subscribe, as they say.
Norm's the best.
Norm's the best ever. I got the shirt on. You can't see it. The audience will see it. You can't see it. You want to talk about the Mario Kart booster pack? Do we care that much?
I mean, I'll just throw it out there. The second, because it took a lot longer to get here than I thought. The second wave of Mario Kart 8 booster tracks is coming out on August 4th. And it's not really Nintendo's fault. I thought we were getting like 8 updates. We're getting 6 updates with 8 tracks. So I had done the math wrong in my head.
Ian Math.
We're getting the New York Minute, the SNES Mario Circuit 3, Calamari Desert, DS Waluigi Pinball, Tour Sydney Sprint. I think this is the one. One of these is actually debuting new in this pack, but it will be coming to the iPhone game in the future.
That one's from Mario Kart Tour, according to the website.
There's one that's like going to be in Mario Kart Tour, but it's debuting here. I can't remember which one it is.
Gotcha.
Doesn't matter. More Mario Kart's always good, and I'll definitely be checking those out when they come out.
I mean, yes, when you're going to end up with freaking over 100 tracks or whatever it's going to be at the end of this.
It's like 96 tracks or something that it's going to end
up. I think we should be good. This one doesn't look as polished. All right, then play the polished tracks then. Play the other 80 polished tracks then. I mean, God. You imagine being a kid. We had back in my day, we had 16 tracks on Super Nintendo. We had 16 tracks. You got 4 cups. Now you get a billion cups.
And we thought we had a wealth of
game 16 tracks.
Opportunities then.
God.
Holy shit, 16.
It's a rainbow track. So look at that. There's no borders to it. I watched Norm try to play Mario Kart Super Nintendo on Twitch a week or so ago. It was not pretty. I'll just say that. Norm, you gotta bone up on your. I'm gonna be a backseat driver. You gotta bone up on those skills, buddy. Mario Kart. It looks fun. I didn't sign up for the first one. I don't think because. You get this for free when you do the upgrade?
Do get it for free.
Okay, then I have it.
Upgrade, yes.
I think I did the upgrade? God, I don't remember. Knights of the Old Republic has been delayed indefinitely. This is the remake that was
paused
announced.
Paused indefinitely. Right, hot on the heels.
Paused.
EA.
Delayed.
Being shitty and talk. It was just a couple weeks ago they made the single player game comment. And just a few weeks later, this is a nice way of saying it's canceled. I can't read this, positively in any way, shape, or form. I think people were really looking forward to it. you know, Knights of the Old Republic, the first one, and to, I think, a lesser extent, the second one, you know, are both extremely well regarded. I think they were originally BioWare RPGs. I would have liked to have seen this, but, you know, that's how it goes. You know, very few companies seem to be interested in focusing on single player games. But if this frees them up for something new, you know, that's not a remake, then maybe it'll be worthwhile.
According, this is IGN recapping. According to Bloomberg, Texas-based studios Aspyr's recent internal demo did not land as well as it could have when it was shown to Lucasfilm and Sony. This led to Aspyr telling employees that the project would be put on pause and that the company would look for new contracts and development opportunities. So I guess it was not just didn't land well, it was a disaster. If they're saying we can't go forward with this anymore. So I guess this is a remake of a now, was it 20-year-old game? More than 20 years old. Was it 2000 or 99 the first one came out?
I think it was 2000, 2001.
How do you get to the point where, like, all right, we did a reveal trailer last year and everyone got all pumped for it. And now, okay, this looks like hot trash, I guess, is what Lucasfilm and Sony thought. And so they're like, we can't even fix this. Like, how do you get to that point where you're working on this game for like 2 years, probably, and it's like, this is garbage? It goes back to the Metroid Prime thing where I guess if you don't have someone really, really steering it and making sure it's on track, but like, I don't understand how you waste all that resources and money and years and you just throw it all out. But they're throwing it all out.
Great. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where it does kind of seem weird. You had a base game to go off of, your gameplay and development, you know, choices are already made for you.
You just got other
put a fresh coat of paint on it and get it out there. So yeah, it seems odd that they couldn't do it.
And you got other engines.
Other remakes like poorly done too. I mean, we just had that trilogy, the Grand Theft Auto trilogy collection come out.
Oh yeah.
And was an absolute fucking disaster. So, you know, maybe it's not as easy as I'm thinking it is.
But I mean, I look at this where it's like, okay, you have other third person, EA owns a lot of third person Star Wars games. They couldn't like use that engine for the action RPG. Like, it's a third person RPG. Like, why couldn't they? Whatever.
I don't know. We're armchair developing here.
But I'm armchair.
Like, you're right. They had like that Jedi Fallen Order engine.
They had the redheaded stepchild Jedi game. They had that one. Just use that and just like plug. I don't know. Whatever. It's not what we're talking about. What is worth talking about in some weird way is Heritage Auction Night Trap NFTs.
Jesus Christ.
I wish I knew about this at Comic-Con. Last week, because I could have asked the people at the booth, like, so you think this is a good idea to sell Night Trap NFTs on your website? So they're selling 10 of them. So they're going to have a big auction that goes off this week. This is going to be one of their first big signature auctions for video game stuff, where it's mostly video games since before the lawsuit, I think, was announced in, I think it was late May. So this is going to be significant. We're going to talk about, I might do a whole segment on it next week about the game prices that happen. So what are these NFTs? So you are getting a link to a grainy video for most of these. You have Control Moves In, One of One. You have Cornered by Vampires with Dana Plato there, looks like, in her nice tank top. You have End of the Line, a guy with a shotgun or a rifle. You have I Can't Stand This. So these are all memes for the game. The game is not really known for much besides the goofy full motion video stuff. Kelly Comes Clean, I guess, when she gets captured. Then you have like a makeup lecture. And then you have the most famous one, of course.
The infamous shower scene.
Which is what the hell they played, you know, that's what they played up on Capitol Hill. And that's what got people all up in a... When there's no nudity, first of all, there's nothing graphic. You see her get like strapped around the neck by the vampires, which just look like home invaders, basically, in caps or whatever, and pull her off. It's not graphic at all. It's ridiculous. It's goofy. It's, you know what I mean? It's not even, the tone of it isn't even horror to me. It's just stupid, you know? Yeah. So the point is that this is garbage that is worthless. That's helping it to help kill the planet. And
talk about a grainy video too. It's like really, really bad quality.
Oh yeah, this is like 120 by 80 resolution, whatever it was on Sega CD. It was awful, the resolution. And almost none of them have a bid. or like a $6 bid, and then the highest one is the infamous shower scene, which is what they call it, $105 to get the NFT. And this is going to be part of their live auction. So I will make sure to try
part of their live auction.
Yeah, this is part of the event. I can do part of their live proxy bidding. So I don't want to frame it. I want to watch the live auction when it happens in a few days for these items.
Right.
To see how fucking awkward it's going to be with a guy with a gavel. It's a guy with the glasses who, I don't know why he didn't talk to me at Comic-Con. I talked about other events, whatever. That's fine. We don't have the best relationship. He talks down to me, whatever. That's fine. But like, I want to see him do the auction and how awkward it's going to be gaveling this shit, this horseshit. Because it's horseshit.
Yeah, this is not. This is stupid.
Let's see. I'm trying to. Did you see the description here?
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the shower scene one.
Non-fungible token. Quite possibly the most infamous scene in video game history. No, and ironically, one intended as a spoof of Team Horror Films. This is a unique Night Trap NFT. Only one token exists, and there will never be another, minted from this specific video segment and signed by producer Tom Zito. A digital signature? It was created from the original Sega CD digital video file encoded for the game in 92. All right. Remember they tried to do that awful Night Trap Kickstarter about four or five years ago? We called them out on it, how terrible it was. They tried to do like a whole like higher-produced remake of it with the footage.
Yes. Okay. I do remember that. There's been so much stuff over the past few years with Night Trap. Like, Night Trap has been milked dry. So yes, I actually kind of forgot about that.
That's what I'm getting at. So they tried it. They asked for an exorbitant amount of money to quote unquote like remaster and put it out. And I called them at the time, like, this is ridiculous, the amount of money. And it obviously failed. So then they do the one good thing they could do and do a digital re release. And they did the limited run one. Great. That's what people want to play. Great. That's all you can do with it. This is such. Like you're Mr. Zito, this is all you can do with Night Trap. You've done it. You've done it. You re-released it digitally. You did it physically for new generation. You can do future digital releases. That's about all Night Trap is at this point. And you don't buy to enjoy the game. You buy it as an oddity. No, not many people are going to be buying this to bone up on their Night Trap strategies or to speed run it. You know, there probably is a speed running thing for this.
I like full motion video and Laserdisc games, at least a lot of them. And I mean, I have Night Trap. I have the physical version. I got the limited run version when it came out at a convention. It's just not fun.
No,
it's not good.
It wasn't even developed originally as a console game, which go back to the history of it. It was like a VHS tape fucking weird thing. Whatever. Go watch the documentary. That our pals, My Life in Gaming, did.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's like the best thing that's come out of this is you know, that really good documentary.
Yeah, seriously, we've like you said, it's been we've got the towel, we've wrung it dry.
Right,
my hands are starting to chafe from the ringing. They're chafing from it.
More fun news. Speaking of NFTs, GameStop, their NFT marketplace just had its worst 24 hours. And it pulled in on that day a grand total of $4,696, with the lowest amount it pulled in at over any given hour being $13.40.
Woo!
$4,696 is a good day for a small video game or comic shop. It is not what I would call a successful amount of money for the highly touted and much ballyhooed GameStop NFT website, you know, marketplace.
That they've invested a ton of resources and money into.
And I've seen some NFT people trying to fucking cope, being like, oh, well, the website's not costing them any money right now. It's just in beta. That's just, you know, server upkeep, and they don't have people working on it. Bullshit. Mm-hmm. This is costing them a shitload of money.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's also, more importantly, it's when once you start shifting strategy and focus away from something, when you get into the sunken cost fallacy, which we knew this was going to be, you're stuck with this. It's like, they're not going to pull the plug on this right away. They're gonna go down this road with the Chewy guy and try to do this shit. And it's not going to work out. And it's an embarrassment. It tarnishes. Yeah. I'm not saying GameStop's brand is in the highest esteem, like it ever was. But like, there's not much more you can do to wipe it out versus NFT stuff.
Yeah.
Even before even before the market tanked in the past months, it still was held in low regard. And the only thing propping it up was the crypto bros, NFT bros, that were basically hoping that the retirement fund was going to come from this bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, it is what it is.
I mean, and this is, you know, relatively recently after it launched. It hasn't even been a month since this, since they opened the marketplace. I would love to see numbers on this as we move forward. I would love to know what it's doing 6 months from now, if it's still up in 6 months.
Yeah, you've had now with this and obviously the fucking disgusting 9/11 NFT that they took down. Two really bad pieces of news in a week about this. My favorite comment, if they sell this spreadsheet as an NFT, I'll buy it for $13.39. Which is funny because like you go on the Reddit and you can see the spreadsheet looking at the Ethereum and the amount spent, and that's how they figured out the hourly Ethereum versus like, the cumulative and the approximate amount per hour.
Right.
And so like at one point, yeah, $13.40 an hour was the lowest point. I'm guessing in the middle of the night. So have fun with your bullshit blockchain URLs. Have fun with it.
Don't forget they had that problem immediately where someone was minting NFTs and attaching games to them and seling other people's games. So there's been at least one issue with this marketplace, I'd say, every week since it launched.
I guess I'm waiting for the good NFT news. Like, what is the good use or like the good, like successful? What's been the most successful one? The fucking Bored Yacht Apes one, and like that
Bored Ape Yacht Club, and then I think there was
CryptoPunks or whatever.
CryptoPunks, and then there was like early, or those are the blue chip NFTs, Pat.
Yes.
early on, there was a digital artist who made like, I don't know, a bunch of millions of dollars doing a sale. I can't remember his name. It's unimportant, but that was like the high point. That was.
But I just mean for like a use case for an actual NFT. Like
we're not going to get one, man.
That awful animated, I can't even call it comedy. That short with the apes. Did you see that?
Yeah, I watched like 30 seconds of it.
It's horrific.
It was actually downright offensive to me. I couldn't watch it.
The animation's horrific, but the writing and whatever you want to call it, comedy, it's like, I don't know who wrote that. The crypto fucking and NFT bros? Well,
the animation looked like garbage too, in my opinion.
Everything was garbage. The point was everything. They could even hire like a professional writer. But then again, like, what's the lore behind, you know, an NFT? I guess you got to make one up. It was terrible. And that's the most successful one. And obviously Seth Green trying to do his awful show. Where it got stolen. Did he get it back? Did Seth Green get his ape back?
I don't know. I don't fucking care.
Did Seth Green get his ape around? Oh, he reclaimed. He paid the ransom of $300,000. What a fucking tool.
Wow.
It happened in June. Wow.
That's stupid.
So it was, he spent a lot of money on it. He then got it for this show and they did the pilot, which I saw part of it. It was horrible, of course, because you have like a bar and then you have like some random NFTs walking around, gets it stolen. It's not even really, not stolen. It's like, oh, I let someone take it legally. That's basically what it is. Because on the blockchain, if it's in the ledger, it's legal. If I have the rights to it, I mean, there's no centralization.
There's no oversight.
And then in June, he just paid $300,000 to get it back.
Jesus Christ.
So he can do the rights to this crappy show. We missed that. It happened a couple months ago.
Boy, how could we miss Fred is NFT back, news?
Fred is back home.
You want to talk about Dr. Disrespect here? He's got a game that looks like shit. We talked about this a while back when Dr. Disrespect decided that he was going to start a video game company he was unceremoniously banned from Twitch with still no explanation as to why he was banned. He said he was going to bring together and start a video game company that was going to make the best games that anyone had ever seen. We mocked him relentlessly for thinking that just because he has money, he can say he's going to do something and do it.
He's got money and fame, but not good judgment. Herschel Beam IV.
Yeah.
Herschel thought he's going to come out with this game and it's going to go gangbusters. It's called Dead Drop. The world's first vertical extraction shooter, which I'm guessing it means like you enter off a helicopter in a building and then you go back up?
No idea.
Was that
no
vertical
one seems
extraction?
To know.
Or do you have a jetpack on?
I have no idea. But this article on Mashable says, disrespected Midnight Studios described the game as the world's first vertical extraction shooter, and early access has been given to fans who bought the $50 Founders Access Pass.
Woo!
And to be clear, more clear than the definition of a vertical extraction shooter, this is early footage, and you can tell in the video below by the choppy frame rate, poor gun mechanics, lack of animation, sound designs, etc. And it does look like shit. It's extremely choppy, yes. And I don't think it looks particularly great. It looks like every other dark and gritty first person shooter.
Yeah, there was like an open, like the part you see the city, and I don't know if they were going for like a future, like a Blade Runner vibe, or but it looked like it was kind of modern, but not futuristic.
It was the only part of the trailer that looked even remotely okay. And as people have said, it's prototyping, and you're not going to get that sort of look throughout. What is far more telling are the game, quote unquote, gameplay segments they showed, which are like shooting gallery stuff, basically.
Yeah, it was like a skeleton dummy or that you shot and a target. And it was just an overly huge machine gun that was way too big. And the one thing I saw that was weird is when you're running, the gun was like really going up diagonally across, like super unnaturally swinging when you're carrying a machine gun that probably weighs 25, 30 pounds. It's not going to swing up like this. Like it was overly done. That's what I noticed. And yes, the choppy frame rate
was like the most noticeable.
Like 35 frames, you know, like 40. It wasn't 60. It was definitely dropping. And so he supposedly hired some people that know what they're doing. So one of the comments was from someone, the Photoshop guy said, this dude really just strapped an M16 and an M41A pulse rifle from Alien together and called it a day. Yeah. That's what the gun looked like. Yep.
And it's like the size of the frickin' screen, and like the reload animation on it is crazy too. Like it takes up the entire screen to reload.
Herschel had said that it was going to blow away anything you see in Call of Duty and these modern games. And then someone said, Tom Henderson said, he probably meant the Call of Duty Mobile, which is still a reach.
Yeah, he had a deleted tweet that said it would blow away. He could take a screenshot right now and it would blow away anything you've seen in Call of Duty Engine. Not true, Herschel. Not true.
But wait, there's more. This is an NFT game.
Yep. God, we can't escape it. So I guess NFTs are being minted with every like version that gets pumped out for people to check. So you can have basically an NFT showing how long you've been in the how long you've followed the development of the game, I guess is what it is.
How can you bootlick someone anymore? Like you're gonna pay for the privilege of following my project.
Yep. Players who have bought the Founder Pass have access to snapshot builds of the game that release every 6 weeks. These snapshots come with a procedurally generated NFT of a character who serves as the player's in-game avatar.
Jesus God.
So every snapshot comes with an NFT. Collect all of these development follies.
So basically selling the game way early in development, that may never come out. And that's what you're doing. You're charging people for this game that may never come out.
Yep.
Because this isn't even pre-alpha what you're seeing. This is like you shouldn't be showing this stuff this soon.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be showing it.
People have commented on that. Basically, like there is no benefit to showing your game this early if that's the condition it's in.
Yeah, this is I got some Unity code prefab for a shooter and threw some graphics on top of it. Like that's basically what it looks like.
Yep.
Maybe I'm not giving enough credit to the devs, but that does not look like it's, you know, at this point, that's not the most difficult thing in the world to do. Is a first person shooter. It's not. So it's just doing a quality one. The Mini Genesis 2 might be in shorter supply than we expect. Nintendo's Genesis 2.
Yeah, Nintendo's Genesis 2. Ours reached out to Sega shortly after the Genesis Mini 2 was announced because they wanted to clarify on exactly who is producing and shipping the system. Sega of America. Oh, I was trying to find. Only one. Okay.
This is from our pal Sam Mekovich.
Yes.
Wrote this article.
Yeah. Is coming to the United States. Sega confirmed to Ars Technica that the system in question would be an incredibly limited supply, around 1/10 the count of the 2019 Sega Genesis Mini.
1/10? That's
insanely small.
1/10?
Yep. Yeah, that's nuts.
And the, and that one sold pretty well. It didn't sell it. It took a while to sell out that run, but like that was pretty popular.
Yeah.
1/10?
I mean, maybe they're thinking that the second batch of games they're throwing on there just isn't going to, you know, sell as well as the first batch. Maybe they think everyone was satiated with the first one. But 1/10 does seem surprisingly low. And I hate to say it, it's going to open themselves up to just insane scalping.
Well, it's going to open it up to people bitching at them, rightfully so, that how could you do this?
Yeah.
This screams of mismanagement and not getting... of developing a product before realizing, are we going to be able to manufacture this thing properly?
Sure.
That's what it screams to me. What if I'm on, if I'm at Sega and you're telling me I can only do 1/10, I'd be like, what the hell is the point of putting in the resources and time then? 1/10 of it?
Yeah, you're man. Not,
that's incredible to me. Not even half. You said, oh, half. Okay. That's still not great, but okay. That's a reasonable amount. 1/10. I guess the good news is that it's not going to be as popular as the NES Classic. And we already have a Genesis one out already, but this was interesting for the Sega CD stuff. This is very interesting to get this stuff.
Yeah, I agree.
Hopefully that's just the just for the first run. The number of units for this project makes up around 1/10 of the total for the previous Genesis Mini. The letter states. They never announced total sales figures. We can't accurately estimate how many manufactured. Huh. I'm gonna guess they did. I don't know. I'm gonna guess they did 500,000 Genesis Minis. I will guess that, something like that, somewhere between 250 and 500. I don't think they did a million, probably, but it was probably still a pretty good amount of them. But I don't know. That's. I mean, it can't be because they didn't sell out. They sold. I mean, yeah, you can't buy them new anymore, I don't think, right?
It's either production line issues or they just seriously don't think they will have the interest on the sequel that they had with the first one.
That's like a shock to me that it's that low. So I guess when the pre-orders come out, everyone's got to get in early on it. Can you get them? Where can you pre-order from? Amazon?
Get in early.
Sega Genesis. Mini too. Can I order them on Amazon right now while I talk to you? Get them in. You can get them. You can pre-order for $108 on Amazon, but I don't know if that's official. What is that official?
I think that's the right price. So yeah,
it's gonna be $108.
Yeah. Well, I think it was gonna be $100. I think it was gonna be $99.99.
Okay, they raised it. Ships from Amazon Japan. That's right. That's the weird thing. It's going to ship from Amazon Japan. That's what the TurboGrafx Mini did at first before they got them over here. You had to buy them from like Amazon Japan, at least from that website. But this is shipping from there. So are they saying that they get the, so people get the pre-orders in early, I wonder? And it's $22 to delivery. So this is going to cost you $130 shipped to get this. They're going to get a lot of the collectors. I might be interested because... or you might be interested because of the CD games on here. But I think it's very unethical to say this information like this, get people hyped up to pre-order, but we have no idea what all the games are even on this yet. We don't know.
Yeah, there isn't a full list.
We don't even have half the games. 50 titles, I think there's only a list of like 15 of them. So like that's really bad. Hopefully, obviously, some of those are going to be some crossover. You'd hope most of them wouldn't be.
No, there's not.
There's not?
I told you they weren't going to, and they announced that there's no crossover games.
Okay. Then announce the games. They're announcing the games in four waves. Great. Why do you need to do that? If it's only 1/10, why do you need to do that?
Yeah, if we're not going to be able to buy it, what's the fucking point?
Sega gonna Sega, I guess. You know, it's not a limited supply stuff at UltimateNintendo.com.
You stole the one right out of my mouth, but it was very obvious.
You're not in limited supply anywhere with RBI baseball stickers. Look at this roll. It's going to last forever. It's going to outlive me. Enamel CU podcast pin, Pixel Pat pin.
Super Nintendo books, NES books, not for resale Blu-rays, video game years DVDs, and more. We have some t-shirts left in some irregular sizes as well for sale at ultimatenintendo.com. I'm going to be on Twitch Wednesday, twitch.tv/countrycode, watching commercials. Ian will not be there. I'm on Cameo. I just did one at Comic-Con last week. The person was very thankful for that. Cameo.com/PatContry. And then watch the final of the trilogy of the parody Tommy Tallarico voice messages. That's going to be this Sunday. I've been doing it on Sunday.
Have you been doing live, like...
I've been doing premieres.
Yeah.
You know, it's fun. People like them. They don't do as well as the podcast premieres, but, you know, because you're just listening to an insane person talk for 20 minutes. But this wraps up the trilogy. What is your favorite trilogy? And in the second trilogy, we are introduced to Cousin Tony. And then...
Oh, nice.
And at the end, Tommy gets a new position. So it's like the beginning of the beginning of the end is volume two.
So by the end of volume two, is he already out as CEO?
Yes, that's the last one. So that goes up to like earlier this year when it was reported by me originally on Twitter. Then it blew up. Great. Real quick, a procedural lawsuit update to the WADA class action suit. So they're going through some stuff right now in terms of where the trial would potentially take place, California or Colorado, due to click wrap agreements, which is the stuff you click on when you agree to the terms of a site. You don't read it. It's called a click wrap agreement. And so this is going to take some time to hash out before we really know where this is headed. Right. So we'll have a meteor update probably in months, but there is stuff happening, but the wheels of justice turn very, very slowly.
Oh boy, do they.
Going back to Better Call Saul. Watch Better Call Saul out there. I don't know why I didn't watch it sooner. I really don't. It's been amazing. It's finishing up in a couple of weeks, and I discovered seasons 1 through 5 are on Netflix, and then season 6, the newest one, comes to Netflix a lot later, or you can watch it on the AMC Plus or whatever, or just DVR it, or you know, cloud it. And there's no hard drive anymore. Cloud it. DVR it. So... Bob Odenkirk's amazing. You see the Nice Guy movie with him that came out?
No, I haven't.
Mr. Nice Guy?
But I've heard of it.
Is it Mr. Nice Guy or Nice Guy?
Maybe it's just Nice Guy.
Nice Guy movie. Yeah. Bob Odenkirk. What's it called? No, it's not called Nice Guy.
I thought it was.
What the hell was it? That's going to bother me what this movie was called. All right, what else is going on here? Analog Pocket Update 1.1 is out. Big update.
Big. I think the movie was called Nobody.
Nobody. There you go.
Anyway, Analog Pocket has an update, and it's a big one, and I need more time to really look into it and form opinions here. But basically, what I expected to kind of happen here... is happening, and Analog is moving into competing with territory normally occupied by the Mister by going all in on their open FPGA initiative. And what this means is basically anyone can develop an FPGA core that can be run on the Analog Pocket. And people who applied, there's no application to be developers. However, the people that they had apply early on, it was to see if they could get free dev kits. So Analog is actually sending out all pockets are dev kits, but there's a special one that comes with a couple of things that make it easier to access the cores and whatnot. And they're sending those out for free to certain developers, I think, starting this week. It also gets... updates to the basic Analog Pocket user interface and operating system, cartridges that you pop in now that are for one of the four main currently supported systems. So Game Boy, Game Boy Advance, Game Boy Color, and Game Gear. Information will pop up on the screen, and a picture, I believe, of the cart image will appear. And they've announced a bunch of things that are coming in the future. Open Ongoing open FPGA features are August. DAC support is September. Full button mapping is September. That's a big one. Screenshots are coming in September. Game Boy camera image saving. That's interesting. September.
Oh.
New original display modes. I'm very much looking forward to that. Are coming in October. And tracking tools. I don't know what that means. Are coming in October.
Did you mention Space War?
Yes. To show off open FPGA, and you know what they want to do with it. They do include a PDP-1 core. It will only run one thing, but this article by Sam Mekovich does explain that there is already another open. There's already another PDP-1 core that you can, you know, load files into. But yeah, this they chose this one, I think, to show off a different core running on the system, but also because it makes use of the Analog Pocket's two-player one system feature. So you can put this on the dock and you can hook up two controllers and you can play it with anyone else. So
yeah, I'm looking at controller support, two-player, four-player, 13 additional Bluetooth and 2.4G controllers. So they're adding in directly support for these specific controllers finally. Before it was like, well, they might work or pair. Now it's like specific now, like these 8-bit DOE controllers. I see it in the menu. They're adding them in directly, which is nice because then they'll make sure all the buttons work how they're supposed to. Versus like, well, it might work, it might not. You know, like that's nice to do that.
Sure.
Like Sony PS5 is on this list, for example, right now.
There is a bit of drama with this,
of course,
you know, in the dev community. Basically, I understand where it's going, but if people want to develop for it, they want to develop for it. The Mister is looked at as basically open source. You know, the schematics are out there. People, you know, can build these with off the shelf parts. You can also buy them online from, you know, a couple of well-known sources that prepackage these. The argument is that, you know, if you are making these cores for Analog, you're basically working for Analog for free and adding to basically a list of bonuses that you would get for buying it, which would sell more systems. I think the problem with this argument right now, though, is Analog doesn't have the systems to sell you. So it's not, they're not making money off of it. But I understand the basic argument that, you know, you're making their product look better. It's not quite the same if you're developing Mister cores, but like I said, it still makes the Mister look more attractive, and that still is guiding money to people who build Misters and send them out. So,
yeah, I'm sure there's some relationship between the people that build the Misters and the components and the developer. I'm not going to be totally naive, but I would think there's some relationship there in some form.
It's not as set in stone for sure.
Even if there's not one, I think it's incredibly it's gatekeeping and selfish to think that we're the only ones that can own this sort of technology.
Sure,
like, we want no competition. Why can't you open up more people to be interested about FPGAs? Why is that a bad thing? Like, why do you feel threatened by that?
Sure.
It opens up people that discover this, or maybe they get into it because of the Analog. Maybe they didn't know what an FPGA was before. It's how we first started really talking about it more and more when we start learning about this. One of the things, I don't see why it would be bad. It's competition. It's fine. You don't want someone to make money off of this. Well, they're making money off of the hardware either way. Like,
sure.
To me, it's like if you think this is being used for nefarious means, oh, they're going to get these cores for free for future products. I think you really overestimate how easy it is to bring these products to market, how it is to develop this hardware and get it manufactured and shipped. I really think so. They're not coming out with now even a new Analog system every year because it's a lot harder than that. It's like, what, every year and a half it's been? And we still don't know when the new one's coming out. They announced the Duo one like so far long ago. We have no idea when that's even going to come down the pike. Next year, we have no clue. Year after. So I really think that's I'm not going to say that a company that's looking to make some money doesn't have some capitalistic sort of motivation, but right. This seems like they're doing a lot for where I don't see the end goal coming back to them directly in their pocket for a lot of this stuff. I don't maybe I'm being naive at that. I don't see where all this stuff's going to come result in money back into their pockets on this. I'm going to, at this point in time, this is their statement. OpenFPGA was created to further video game hardware preservation with FPGA technology. Analog developers have access to analog pocket IOs, so developers can utilize cartridge adapters or interface with original or bespoke hardware to support legacy media. It's a business. They exist to make money. Doesn't also mean they can't do good things.
Sure.
Am I being too naive? Maybe.
Well, I think we'll see. I think we'll see.
But I don't see how this makes them money in the short term, especially when I go to order a new pocket, you ain't getting it until sometime in 2023. Right.
Well, yeah, that's what I was saying. I think to think it's making anyone money in the short term is
I mean, God,
a little reactionary.
I still can't buy an Atari Lynx adapter, for God's sake, or a TurboGrafx one coming soon. They can't get these things made, it seems right. Like. You know what I mean? Like, the only one you can buy is the Game Gear one right now. All right, what else is happening here?
Well, in terms of other niche hardware developers, Polymega is finally speaking after rumblings of them not answering any questions for a couple of months. The last time they had updated anything on their Twitter before this, I think, was May 25th. You had the exact date. So here's what they're saying. Basically, here's a brief update, which we hope you'll find informative. Update. First off, factory lead times increased this quarter due to one of our critical suppliers' inability to meet the lead time estimates they previously provided for us. I'm trying to find the rest of this. It says 1 out of 8, but I don't see where the rest of this tweet is.
They did them in different tweets because they don't know how Twitter works. They didn't do it in one thread.
Idiots.
You have to like click on. Sorry. You have to. I mean, okay, they're not dumb, but they don't know how Twitter works.
Idiots is very strong. What was 12 to 16 weeks has increased to 40 weeks. We're working on delivery timing estimates now. If you've got a pre-order, you'll get your system. We will be stopping pre-orders sometime soon until we can fulfill our backlog. I would say, but stop it now.
Why would it be soon?
I don't know what that means. Modules have begun shipment to their facilities in Germany. CS team is back and will be responding to your emails and service requests shortly. Where'd they go? We all appreciate the patience you have shown and also understand that you are all waiting on important information. And the team is making big progress on other new projects, and we can't wait to share the latest news with you.
The MPG Saturn, I guess, for the video CDs they had. I don't know. They show
Saturn
that.
MPEG.
Who cares?
I've noticed something here. Their tone has definitely turned around, and I'm going to guess it's because they're probably feeling a lot of pressure and heat.
This is what we said for years. It's like, just have a decent social media, and people are like, they could run their businesses though any way they want. Yes, you can, but it looks awful from a PR standpoint, and it has idiots like us, speaking of idiots, talking about how bad this is versus having decent customer service and a decent PR face. You look like you don't care about the customers I've given you money now for 3.5 years or more. Yeah. When you're obstinate, when you don't tweet, when you don't give updates, why would I want to do business with you? Why would I want to buy your product? It's just horrible common sense not to do these things. They don't have common sense, but so they obviously got someone doing this now. And then now they're tweeting out stuff like, in this day in 1990, Dr. Mario was released on the Famicom. So now they're doing this stuff. It's like too late, but I kind of appreciate it a little bit, where it's like, okay, we're trying to show that we're doing some retro stuff on the timeline. Mario Paint came out in this day in 1992. They're doing the stuff you hate, where it's like, oh, you know, it came out this time. You know, it's like, whatever. Yeah. It's low-hanging fruit.
Easy content.
Yeah, you get some engagement. It got 67 likes, this one, from Mario Paint yesterday. This reeks, though, of, if I had to diagnose this business at this point, they are dying. If they have to wait for orders in order to get a bigger order in order to fulfill them quicker and can't afford to do them in piecemeal, I don't know how many orders are still out there that they have to fulfill. And I'm guessing the new ones coming in are not coming in quickly. That's my guess.
Right. And then, I mean, not trying to judge too harshly here, but we're going to stop taking pre-orders soon thing it's already a problem. So that, to me, it's not hard to read between the lines FOMO. And read, but we're going to keep it open for as long as we can because we need the operating money.
But also FOMO. We're going to do it soon. We're not going to tell you when we're cutting it off, but so
oh, sure.
Get but in early.
I think it's all for money.
And then obviously. The funny thing is if you get that pre-order in, the wait's now 40 plus weeks. I'm not going to trust that estimate. It's probably going to trust the plus side on the 40 plus. Like trust the plus.
If they're saying, yeah,
they don't know.
They don't have the faith. They don't have the trust yet to take that face value.
Yeah, that's unfortunate there. I want to talk about our favorite mobile game real quick.
Oh, man.
The one that people are insisting we defended, even though you said it was going to be shit when you originally talked about it.
Yeah, I didn't defend the game or Blizzard. I told Picky,
you fucking idiots. Whatever. We didn't defend it.
Anyway, yeah, so some guy who spent Diablo Immortal reaches 100 million from microtransaction spending, despite criticisms about in-game spending. The game's making a lot of money. This is from Eddie McCooch at GameSpot.com. So I don't know. I mean, there's got to be whales out there.
Of course,
there's going to be whales for any big multiplayer game. And I'm not really surprised to see this money being spent. I honestly feel like that sounds kind of low to me for a Diablo game, thinking that if it had gotten good press, it would probably be a lot higher.
Well, I mean, when did it come out?
True. Just a couple months ago.
We're not that far into it. June 2nd.
So 100 million is
2 months.
Okay, that's up there.
I mean, these mobile games could have a tail of several years, potentially. So... I keep adding new content, new character stuff, new weapons, new skins. I'm only based it off Raid Shadow Legends, but you know that game's already what three years old, three and a half, and there's still new content a lot.
Oh sure. And then in other Diablo Immortal news, a player who spent $100,000 on upgrades and items for his character can't get into a major end game event. He has been bugged out of a major end game event and cannot access it. And I mean, if you've spent $100,000, I can't imagine ever spending $100,000 on a game, but that would be pretty annoying. There was an update as of this morning, 9:22 a.m. While Blizzard didn't comment directly on the case above, it did say it's working on general fixes to matchmaking that will arrive sometime this week. We've heard feedback that some Diablo Immortal players are unable to find matches in Battleground PvP, or it might take a long time, a spokesperson for Blizzard wrote in an email to Kotaku. We are looking into these reports and expect to roll out changes to the matchmaking system this week. I feel like that's maybe something you'd want to have nailed down before you released your game, especially if it's going to affect your whales, like the people who are, you know, spending all the money.
I'm not defending Blizzard here, but would they have known that some crazy person would spend $100,000 on a game?
Like they were certainly hoping.
There's a whale. To me, a whale is you spend $100,000. I mean, is there anything left to buy in the game at that point when you spend $100,000? That must be everything.
The sad thing is, I feel like there probably is more stuff to purchase.
I mean, that's nuts. That's insane. $100,000. Obviously, there's still random stuff, so you can't buy everything directly. You're buying chances to get stuff, if that's how it works.
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
But you're still like you're beefed up. If I spent $100,000 in Raid Shadow Legends,
unstoppable.
I would never lose. You can do PvP, which is you're not playing person directly. The team you're doing 4-on-4 against one team, or else you do 3 sets of 4-on-4. I'd have all maxed out stats for all the artifacts and items on all those guys and gals and orc witch women that I love, Krila. I love you, Krila. I'd have them all maxed out, and it would be very tough to lose, unless someone else I fought also spent that amount of money to get that. It would be tough to lose. I'll just say that because at that point it's an arms race. At that point, that's all it is. It's like who's going to get the best characters, which is random. You can't buy any characters, but you increase odds of getting characters. They do like, oh, if you do like 15, what the hell is it? There's three different gems. I told you the higher gem to crack it open. If you do 15 of those in this time period, you're guaranteed to get this hero. But to get 15 of those orbs at one time is nearly impossible unless you're spending an insane amount of money to get that. You know what I mean? Like, to guarantee it. You know what I mean? I've never had more than one of those gems at one time. Maybe two, but one. And because I held it off because it's very hard to earn those top tier chances to get those better heroes. Like, very hard. So when we do a Raid Shadow Legends, do another sponsorship. We got to get that going.
All right. That was a long intro. We're moving on.
Ian, we never really discuss Roblox ever on the show.
No, we don't.
What is Roblox? Well, Roblox.
Game development platform.
With very sort of blocky style graphics. Yep. Came out in 2006 on Windows, iOS in 2012, Android in 14, and then Xbox One 2015. Considered a game creation system. You can program games and play games created by other users. And then obviously it blew up. If I know nothing about Minecraft, I know less about Roblox. I'll say that. I'm not sure how much you know about Roblox, Ian.
Not much. I know that it's popular with kids.
Free to play. Free to play, which is big.
Free to play, popular with kids, but some adults really like it too. It's, like I said, a game development platform. You can play other people's levels. You can make your own levels. I'm not sure if there's any side coding you can do, but people have done, you know, a lot of interesting stuff. One of my favorite game developers, oh God, last name Kavanaugh, I believe, did a thing last year where he like worked on, he's a popular game developer, made stuff like VVVVV, Dicey Dungeons. Okay. He went through and like kind of really checked out the development tools and made like a, you know, made some levels in a little game. So there is a lot of fun stuff you can do in there.
There are microtransactions and the Robux, whatever it's called.
Lots of microtransactions. Yeah,
they gotta make money.
Get, you know, sound effects and, you know, development pieces and widgets, essentially, I guess, that you can use.
Wikipedia says that more than half of all American children under 16 are active users. That's a huge number. I don't know if that's true or not. That's what Wikipedia says. I have to check the sources.
I feel like that's a insane
lot. Because to me, if you told me Minecraft, I would have believed you versus this. But that's a lot. But it says 164 million monthly active users. That's a huge game.
Yeah,
I'm surprised by that number, but I'll trust it as of August of last year. So why do we bring up Roblox? Are we pivoting to being a children's gaming podcast? Not yet. We're not doing that.
No.
One of the things that Roblox is famous for is the character death sound. It's an oof sound. It's a child's voice recorded. It goes oof when you die in the game. That's what it says. There's memes based upon it. There's videos been made about it. And on its surface, it's like, oh, that's cute. It's fine. Why are these idiots talking about this? Why are we talking about this, Ian?
Well, because the sound effect is being removed from the game, and we can all point the blame at a Mr. Tommy Tallarico. So basically, there was, and we can get a little bit more into the info. Roblox, basically, so Tommy Tallarico, owns the right to the oof sound.
Biggest air quotes you can possibly have. So Tommy Tallarico Studios worked on this PC game called Messiah that came out around 2000 or so. He hired someone named Joey Curis, who actually did the sound design on the game. So this person, the sound engineer, Joey, likely recorded this sound, put it in the game. But since Tommy Tallarico Studios hired him, the rights to the sound would go back to the company that hired. That's how these, when you hire someone to make art for you and pay them, that's usually how these agreements work. It goes back to the original person that paid and hired the person to make them. They own the rights to that. Right. So Tommy Tallarico Studios is the reason why Mr. Tallarico can own stuff like a Guinness World Records little fucking plaque that he paid for that says, I worked on the most games ever out of someone. Because if you look at Tommy Tallarico Studios, it's a huge amount, dozens and dozens and dozens of games under that moniker, which is the company that he still runs, where he may not necessarily have worked on the games directly, but hired others to do it, like in this case.
Right.
So that's
he didn't
the background.
Do anything, but people hired under him did it and made the sound effects. And the sound effects that go into the games are the ones he's saying.
Or the soundtrack, yes.
Even though he didn't do a damn thing.
So
he
this so
accepted
this,
money for licenses, essentially.
So this originally became a kerfuffle between Roblox and Tommy back in early 2020. They had a developer post that happened at the time. And the reason we never talked about this before is that we did not think this was germane to the Amico discussion. We thought, well, it's separate. It's interesting. But now that this has happened, I think we can comment on it more. So Roblox said this. Do you have the poster opening? We want to comment on something that has recently popped up in social media surrounding the use of the OOF sound and its claims of its ownership by Tommy Tallarico. Roblox's founders, Eric and David, got the OOF sound along with all the original Roblox sounds from a stock sound CD-ROM they purchased of licensed copyright-free sounds, not from an illegal website, as Tommy has suggested on social media. So I think Tommy started posting things wildly. I don't have access to his Twitter anymore, but in my mind, the way Tommy acts like a child, he probably made all these accusations, went off on social media without even contacting them at first. And so this
that would be my guess.
And this warranted the response. We deeply respect the rights of IP holders, and we have built our platform over the past 12 plus years based on respecting and honoring creators. Despite the fact that Tommy has no copyright to the OOF sound, and in response to our requests, he has presented us no proof of ownership to it, we've nevertheless been working in good faith to reach a fair resolution with him. As part of that, we have asked Tommy to become part of our creative community, and we look forward to exploring that opportunity with him further. So Roblox maintains that he has no copyright to it. I have no idea what happened with the CD that they bought. If that person got the rights legally or not, that's a whole other conversation.
Right.
But Roblox maintains that they got a stock CD-ROM, which they used to exist. I owned some back in the day. They would make them for music. They put them sometimes include them with electronic music magazines. And if you remember that, Ian, they'd be like, these are stock sounds that you can use that are copyright free. You can use them for your music.
Yeah, they use all sorts of loops, and you can basically put a song together like Legos. You didn't have to write anything. You just found what sounded nice and sequenced it.
Correct. And they obviously existed, or they probably still do, but like now you're downloading them. You could buy them for sound effects. So what happened was this. So they reached out and made an agreement with Tommy, I believe was later in 2020.
They were just trying to do it to smooth things over. It doesn't look like they ever needed to do this. It straight up says he has not proven ownership.
Well, here's the thing. The OOF sound is obviously in that Messiah game. I don't think that there's anything that you can argue about that. The argument is, well, first of all, the CD thing is one thing. Like if they bought it from a copyright free CD, then wouldn't Tommy go after
the CD
producer and hash that out? Did Tommy make a deal with the CD maker and not realize it at the time? Or did this person really go into Messiah and say, I want that OOF sound for a children's sound, and then rip it from the game? Is that what they did? So there's questions there.
I think it's you can point to the fact that Tommy probably saw this as a gold mine, and this is where he could make the money, not going after the CD creator.
Sure, but I talked about it with you last night about copyright law, pulling back the curtain.
Sure,
about it's an extremely gray area with copyright when you have short sound recordings that really have nothing done with it in terms of post-production or processing. Like if you recorded someone saying the word the, right?
Yeah.
That's not copyrightable. If you record someone just making a laugh sound, like that, according to the copyright law, that's not necessarily something you can copyright. It's a very short sound recording. So that said, I'm not saying that. Let's go down the path of this CD. Let's just say, for the sake of argument, that the CD pulled the Messiah OOF sound without Tommy Tallarico Studios' permission. Let's make that case, or make that argument. Let's say Tommy makes that argument. That doesn't necessarily mean still that he owns the copyright to that OOF sound. That would have to be hashed out in court. And that's where I come back to that. If Tommy thinks, because he tweeted that, like, this is a huge part of Roblox, a game that has 100 million people per month playing it. If Tommy thinks he was in the right and there was a big payday, he could have easily convinced a copyright lawyer of the same and then take him to court.
Right.
And that never occurred during this process that we know of. Never occurred. So what's going on here? What happened? So like you said, Roblox trying to make it right. Like, okay, this is okay. We're going to try to make this right. So they made some sort of deal where I think it was developers could still use the oof sound, but they had to pay a fee to use it, like part of like a pack, a sound pack.
Yeah, the Tom, and I'm sure he was behind it, the Tommy Tallarico sound pack was what it was called.
Was that really what it was called?
Yes, the Tommy Tallarico sound pack was what it was called.
Wow, way to boost the ego. You know how many more you would have sold if you just called it the oof sound pack?
Yeah.
You would have sold a ton of them, right?
An egotistical asshole.
So along the there was someone called Plasma Node, where they DM with Tommy asking about this came out recently from a few years ago, the DMs about what was happening. So this is all from the DMs. They published it. This is Tommy in the DMs. Hi, all I've been trying to do is sell the sound to Roblox so there won't be a problem anymore. They would own the sound, there wouldn't be any more issues, but they don't want to do that. And they say they owe me nothing. This is where it becomes a problem. To answer your question, if I wanted to, I could claim or take down every single Roblox video and meme on the internet if I wanted, but I don't want to do that. But if Roblox forces me to take them to court, then they would be forcing me to enforce a copyright law as well. Not sure what the heck their problem is. They should just do the right thing and pay me and then own the sound forever. Here's a follow-up. The person said, if you don't mind me asking, is there a general range of how much you are seeking in either case for purchasing or for damages? There's some speculation that you're looking for an upwards of 100 plus million USD.
Oh my God.
I don't know where that speculation came from. I'm going to take this person at their word at this DM that they saw that figure somewhere. And was that leaked from Roblox? Based upon Tommy Tallarico's ego, I would not put that past him.
I wouldn't put anything past them, but that's someone saying something on the internet.
Tommy responded, Roblox can't build their franchise around. He's thinking that the whole game is based upon the oof sound. They can't build their franchise around it. Okay. They can't build their franchise around something they took without permission. Think of all the millions and millions of dollars of free marketing they've received by everyone making videos and memes for them based around my sign. Okay. So he's arguing that they took something without permission. Roblox is going to say, well, no, we bought a copyright free CD back in the mid 2000s
right,
where we thought we were in the clear. And you have to basically show us that we're not because of that. That's basically what their lawyers probably would argue that. Obviously, the sound is special and means something, or else the community wouldn't be freaking out by Roblox saying they're going to take it out. It just proves my point even further. And then it concludes with they already owe me a ton of damages. That's why it's something about a survey that Roblox put out about, I guess, keeping the oof sound in or not, if it would bother someone. My lawyers have been laughing all week. I don't know if Roblox knows what they are doing. Okay. So I guess when push comes to shove, Tommy never filed a lawsuit against him to really even force a sort of like either mediation or some, I don't know, come to the table, come with some sort of agreement, hammer something out. It sounds like that never happened.
Yeah.
And Roblox said, you know, we're not going to do that, but we'll give you probably a cut of this dev pack stuff. So fast forward to now, and Roblox basically comes out and saying, this is going to be gone from the game. And there's no mention of Tommy Tallarico in their Twitter post, and they're basically saying it's coming out of the game and it's gone. So what happened in the past, I don't know, year and a half to 2 years? What do you think, Ian, happened, or why do you think this changed course so quickly?
I'm going to guess that maybe there was, you know, it says it's a licensing issue. You know, they're removing it from, okay, it created a replacement default sound with launches today.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to figure out if the Tommy Tallarico sound pack ever launched. That's what it was going to be called, and I saw that somewhere. But I think what happened is they tried to negotiate with him, and he was an incorrigible asshole and didn't want to work with them. It was probably asking way too much, and probably wanted them to kiss his ass because he thinks he's special. And they got tired of it, and they said, this is not fucking worth it. And they said, no, we're not paying you any money. And because they realized they can live without a sound effect.
Yes.
They can live without one sound effect that people joked about. It wasn't the entire experience. There isn't millions of people playing Roblox because of the oof sound effect, Tommy.
Yes.
So they said no. I have a feeling that they could have, but I think at the end of the day, even if they had the money to do it, my guess is that this guy is a piece of shit and they just don't want to work with him. I think that's it.
They said related to sounds due to a licensing issue, we have removed the oof sound from Roblox and have created a default sound which launches today, which is like a oof. It's like a that. We plan to expand our avatar shop with a whole range of both old new sounds in the future. More to come this. And obviously it got big news because it is known for the oof sound. That is a thing. I knew about the oof sound. Somehow, even though I don't know about Roblox. So
I did too. It's just not integral to the experience.
No, which people will move on from it. Or what's going to happen is this. They're going to easily be a little how do you replace it on your local? How do you go into find the death sound and just replace it with the original one and do it that way? That's going to be done lickety split, if not already.
No, absolutely.
Replace the WAV file or replace the file, whatever it is, the compressed sound file. That'll be figured out easily. So either the agreement expired, like you said, or if it came out, I'm going to say this. I'm going to guess. This is total guessing that Tommy came back to them and demanded more from them in the past months.
Yeah.
That's what I think happened due to his failure. Absolute pathetic failure of running Intellivision into the ground and maybe now realizing I don't have money to continue my lavish lifestyle in the future.
I think that's what I was trying to get at earlier is like provided that pack came out, that would have been about a year ago. I think it did. And yeah, I think it's just, it's a year later. Maybe they need to renegotiate stuff. Tommy asks for more.
I think it was a year and a half ago because Tommy did this really strange update video on his channel from November 2020. I think it came out early 2021. He does this video, if you've seen it, showing off his lavish backyard, gaudy as fuck, pool and hot tub, stone hot tub with a naked woman statue and a dolphin next to it.
Absolutely disgusting.
None of the decor matches in theme, by the way. No, or in style.
It's just gaudy bullshit.
We'll have a dolphin here, and then he does it from his backyard. Nice backyard, I'm not going to lie. And then says, hey, we're working out something. And then I think it was early 2000, I believe 21 is when they launched that stuff.
We know Tommy just talks and talks and talks.
So I'm gonna be straight with everyone. If the CD that Roblox used to take the sound, if the CD creators did not get permission, I do think Tommy's entitled to something. I do think they owe him something. Sure. I'm not saying a huge amount. I'm not saying he's owed $10 million. I think Tommy is entitled to something. I just don't know what the amount is. That's something you would have to hash out over a table and a croissant or in court. Hash that out. I think if you can say that the song is also copyrightable, or excuse me, the sound is copyrightable, and we're talking about a sound that's a quarter of a second long, less than half a second. Like, so I think Tommy is entitled to something. Seriously, I'm on Tommy's side when it comes to that. But again, Tommy is such a douchebag, he probably talked his way out of easy money along the way.
Yes, absolutely, because people would rather not use the sound than deal with him.
Like, he probably talked his way out of, like, maybe Roblox would have said, okay, here's $100,000, go away. You know, and he probably said, no, I don't want that. I can get millions and millions. Well, you could, Tommy, potentially, but you have to hire a lawyer, have to sit through, depositions and discovery, go through discovery and get to a court case years from now. And you probably didn't even have the stomach or the money to do that, which is fine. But I think he probably talked his way out of something. And then in the past months got desperate because Intellivision is gone. We don't know how Video Games Live is doing. And he has no cash cow anymore. He's got
nothing. His profile on Twitter, it sure does say creator of oof.
So there you go. So Tommy, if you really think that, take Roblox to court, buddy. Nothing's stopping you. But if you get some of that cash, I think you should go back into the Intellivision investors and all those
refunds
and refunds for all those pre-orders out there. So when I'm rooting for you, Tommy, I'm not doing it just to be a nice guy saying I like you. It's because you fucked over people who deserve that Roblox money if you get it. That's where it comes back to, unfortunately. So there you have it. That's the story of Tommy Tallarico versus Roblox. And it sounds like unless Tommy files a suit, which I think he would have done it by now if he didn't in the past over 2 years, 2.5 years. I don't think we're going to see this go further, but hey, maybe it will. I don't know. Ian, we have a Patreon.
We do. Patreon.com/CU podcast. You go. And if you feel like parting with some dollars, some greenbacks,
Moolah, some shells,
some dinero, you can get access to the full video podcast, monthly hangouts with Pat and I. You get the bonus bit podcast that we record before the normal episodes. Today was car talk with Click and Clack.
The Pet Boys, Ian and Pat.
Yeah, Ian and Pat.
Yeah, Pet Boys.
And you get access to these poll topics as well. And I do a more or less weekly writing. I'm going to have to do one tomorrow or the day after.
We should do our hangout this weekend, because the week after that we'll be at the Long Island Retro Gaming Expo. We should probably do it this weekend. Speaking of that. Anyway,
Okay, we'll figure that out. figure that one out.
We got a Patreon. We got a Patreon poll topic here. In second place, I'm kind of shocked by this result. See, you can't predict it, people in the Patreons. Sometimes you think you can know what's up. You don't know. Is grading or reselling worse for video game collecting? 42%. In first place, 58%. How important is faithfulness to gaming? Went on CRTs, upscalers, etc. How important is the faithfulness to the original game experience when you're on a CRT or using an upscaler?
So this came the way of Pepe_Salot. I'm probably saying that wrong. Great artist, worked on games like Paradise Killer and whatnot, and does a lot of artwork for Mister related products and stuff like that. So clearly into this. The full question was, are you guys a fan of gaming on CRT monitors? How much do you care about input lag versus availability on new systems, upscalers, etc.? What's your opinion on CRT preservation? Keep up the great work, longtime listener. So for me, when playing older systems, I would definitely say that getting it as close to the original image is pretty important to me. And the main reason being a lot of these games, all of those games made back in the pre flat screen TV era were made to take advantage of certain tricks and things that happened on CRT TVs naturally, the way they displayed the image to make the games look better. And when you remove them from a CRT TV and you put them on a flat screen or something, especially without any sort of upscaling, the games look blotchy. They display poorly. Things that were designed to be hidden on a CRT TV, are no longer hidden. So you see, some weird artifacts and things like that. Certain transparency effects no longer work properly. Certain shimmering and wave, type effects don't look proper. So I do think, it's a personal choice, but for me, faithfulness to gaming is pretty important. I do keep a Samsung CRT in the guest room that Vani and I will use a lot for Sega Saturn. Sometimes I like to hook my PC Engine up in there. And, it's nice to have. It's great for light gun games. It's great for certain rhythm games on like the PlayStation that just do not work properly on flat screen TVs because of delay in the way that the image is put out. So I do think it's important. That said, I don't necessarily think it's the, be all end all. I don't think that everyone who's into gaming has to go for the most accurate experience. I want them to go for the experience that does it for them. And if that's, slapping a Sega Genesis onto a flat screen TV and running it in 16:9 mode, I'm going to cringe. It's going to be hard for me to look at, but if they're having fun, I don't care. Sure. I don't care. I think a great way to kind of meet halfway is, with the upscalers and the line doublers and things like that that are available, like the RetroTINK, 2X, the 5X, the old tried and true FrameMeister. These are good ways to get to up, not only upscale it so that it looks like it should fit on a flat screen TV, but also a lot of them have effects that can help, add scan lines, and things like that, which will give you a closer to original, you know, look to the game that you're playing. Personally, I think a lot of attempts at scan lines, artificial scan lines, don't look particularly great. That said, I have not used a RetroTINK 5X yet, but looking at the scan line settings and things that people have done with it, mm-hmm. I have been fooled by pictures. I've been fooled by screenshots. Like, sure. It looks really, really good. Yeah. And once you get the image on the TV with low lag to approximate the CRT, I think at that point, you know, for me, that's good enough.
Yeah, well, I agree. Once you, if you can get a nice scan line effect that, like you said, it won't never be perfect like a CRT, but approximates the effect and gets you to where you were originally, I think I'm fine with that.
Because if you can get to the point with an upscaler where the effects that you normally lose from going from CRT to flat screen are replicated well to your liking.
Yeah.
I think that's about as far as you can get.
Yeah. Because we talked about it before, when all the artists were doing these games, they were doing it for CRTs. So they were doing the art based upon having scan lines, having the dithering effect and yes. things like that. I put a tweet link here. This came up from a year and a half ago from CRT Pixels comparing the Sonic 3 waterfall here, where like you see it on a CRT with the dithering effects and scan lines and little blurry enemy hiding versus the pixel perfect version on an emulator. And the emulator looks like trash.
Right.
Yeah. Sonic looks clear. He looks like a clearer guy, and so does Tails.
A clearer guy.
I mean, like, but
a funny way to phrase it.
And you have maybe clear overall colors. You see more of the different effects, like on the cheek stuff. But the waterfall looks like trash, and the enemy blending in, you lose the entire effect of that.
Right.
And like the bricks in the ground look different. The background looks different. If you can
get that back, that's where we've done it.
You're supposed to play it the way it was on a CRT. That was the original design of the artists, and that's where you err on to me in terms of how it looks. I hate playing stuff that's like too clean, pixely. Yes. You want to throw a lot of the emulators, whether it's N64, Super Nintendo, NES, they have a whole slew of built-in filters because they realize that's probably what you want to get back to. They even have different color palettes to approximate how the TVs are. You go from RGB monitors, way different color palette than a fucking 1987 Mitsubishi TV that I had in my living room. You know what I mean? Like, that's sure. entirely different. So that so we're getting to that point where it doesn't matter as much. We're going to get close enough. I've seen effects from computer games, the same thing where I saw one on Twitter, I forget where it was, where it was like a skeleton, the pixel perfect version. I think Frank Cifoli might have tweeted out. It was like a skeleton, pixel perfect on an emulator.
Oh, yeah. I remember this. Yeah.
And it looked horrible. Pixel perfect versus how it looked on an original monitor. You lost everything.
The structure of the bones was like completely different. Lost. The shading. Yes. I think if it was hit, he either retweeted him or put them out. But there was another one of like one of the Castlevania characters, and like on an emulator, it's blotchy, you know, with the pixel perfect. But when you look at it with the scan lines, you get shading and muscle tone,
yes.
and like it's just it's really, really freaking impressive what you lose when you go for pixel perfect, but a lot of people seem to go for that these days, and it's not my personal choice. Real quick, he also asks a couple of things. How much do you care about input lag versus availability, and what's your opinion on CRT preservation? To talk about input lag, it's actually one of the reasons why I gave up my FrameMeister. I don't think for all sorts of games it matters, but I was using my FrameMeister, and maybe it was not set up ideally. I mean, I'm not an expert on this shit. I'm a lay person. I'm aware of it, but it's not my forte. But there was always a little bit of lag. And when playing shooters, it just got to the point where like it got annoying. So I got rid of it. The RetroTINK 2X the RetroTINK SCART 2X that I use for my PC Engine now, almost no lag, nothing that, you know,
it hasn't affect your gameplay.
It doesn't impair my gameplay.
Yeah.
So we're, with the CRTs, I think there's good reason to preserve old technology. Like we said, I don't think for the average person, the CRT needs to be their go-to. But just like I think, you know, keeping old turntables in working order, keeping old computers in working order for, you know, history and preservation and being able to experience that exact moment. Yes. I think it's really important. I think where I find it more important than home video games is arcade cabinets. I have yet to see any arcade cabinets that put flat screens in them that look good. I think all of the arcade 1-Up machines look kind of like just weird running the old games on flat screens. Mm-hmm. Until there is a decently inexpensive upscaling option for arcades.
Or effect option that makes it look.
Yeah. Right. Then, I would much rather have the tubes in there on the arcade machines that require it. And I know that is becoming an issue and people are really trying to repair and preserve the CRTs. Our friend Skylar talks about it. I think that's where there's more of an immediate difference if you tried to go from CRT to flat screen. I think it's very important in that regards.
Yeah, I think unless they came up with a way to like do like an overlay to make it look like a CRT on or an LCD, or someone does a run of LCDs designed for arcade games directly. I don't know. That sounds like that would be like a huge undertaking to produce something like that. To me, it comes back to, like you said, what's the original experience? The original experience should be preserved, but yeah. I'm not going to gatekeep and say that everyone needs to play it how you played it, your Genesis in 89. Like, right. You don't have
to
do that.
If this is your hobby and your thing, obviously go for it. And I get it. Like, it's great. But not everyone needs to do it.
No, yeah. Play your analog. Which, by the way, the analog products mostly have filters on them anyway. To sort of like...
Oh, that was... I don't like their I don't like their scan lines.
Okay.
But that's one of those things that I think we'll get. I think what they talk about new display modes. I think the Pocket is going to try some new scan line modes for when you have it hooked up to the TV. And I want to see, because the technology for that has definitely improved.
Okay.
Like I said, look at the Retro Tank 5X.
The Genesis one had it in there. I bring up Genesis. Maybe there's a firmware update that can put more in there, but like you can always try to get there. That's the whole point. You can try you can get there. It's just how much resources you're going to put into it. But the preservation in terms of playing it on the real controllers, real system, and a TV, that should always exist. But I'm not going to gatekeep and say you need that in your home or else you're not a real gamer. Save that for the gaming conventions or in an actual museum. Like, that's, to me, what a museum should be. Set up the living room. Set up this, like, how the National Game Museum has. It has, like, a bedroom from the 80s. It has the 70s living room. Like, that's fine. That's where I sort of err on that side. So, all right. That's all I have. I looked up dithering, by the way. I love that word, dithering. They don't use that enough. We got voicemails.
We do.
You go to anchor.fm/thecupodcast. You go leave us a voicemail. You don't have to do shtick if you don't want to. But here's the shtick deal. Here's the deal. You can try shtick, but I will be extremely critical of your shtick if you try shtick. That's the Pat and Ian agreement. We can allow it, but we'll be very critical. It'll be like you're going to be performing for us in a nightclub, and we're gonna be judging you on the shtick. All right, here's the first one.
Hey, Pat and Ian, this is Ian from Rochester, New York.
Oh.
I'm curious about how important audio quality is for you in terms of gaming. Can you play with the internal speakers on a TV or that crappy little speaker that's on a handheld, or do you need to have a nice pair of headphones or a nice stereo system to really enjoy the game?
I think it really comes down to like when was the game designed? What was it designed for? I don't need to have like, you know, a 7.1 surround sound version of Contra playing for me to enjoy the game.
Hey, if I'm playing a Nintendo or a PC Engine game, I'm fine with the TV speakers because that's what there was at the time. Even with modern games, I you know, for someone who's so into music and collects records like I do, having the banging sound setup has never been my thing. My brother's crazy into that. He builds speakers from scratch. And I mean, he's built rave sound systems and home audio sound systems. That's his thing. But I mean, I've got a cheap, shitty soundbar that was a hand-me-down, and that's about as fancy as we get here in terms of audio. I do think you lose more if you're not playing your modern AAA games with a nice sound system, because they're scored more like movies. You know, you get something sure. out of the base and all that. But I've never been that person.
I think Ian's fine with the Game Boy speaker for Game Boy games. I think that's like part of the experience.
My favorite systems were never audio powerhouses. There you go. So
Turbo Express had decent sound, didn't it? Decent. But I gotta fire up the have I played the one behind me? Have I played the LT? I think I did my
you
first
have
got
to
it.
Answer that.
What's that?
I said you would have to answer that for me.
I miss you, Carlson. Yeah. He hasn't been around the scene selling his imports at conventions this past year. Next
text
one.
Him.
What's that?
You should text him.
Hi, this is the Bavarian guy again.
Hey.
I was wondering what is the best way to preserve hardware that is lost nowadays, like main boards or other things that cannot be replaced that easily. For the 64, there is a motherboard called Reloaded MK2, and I think it's a good way for the purists, but for all the other guys, I think it's better to use an FPGA version. What do you think? Thanks.
Well, we're a long way away from an FPGA and 64 core, but so the question was how to preserve the hardware. Well, I think
FPGA is I think going forward, that is going to be the future. I think we're seeing the beginnings of FPGA, and I think that there's lots of room for that technology to improve, and for people to get, you know, even more adept at programming it. And I don't know what we'll see in the future, but I think that is the future.
The future. Otherwise someone will have to still recreate parts for some of these systems, like get the lenses, the lasers stuff for like an old Sega Saturn made and replacing the parts, stuff like that.
Hey, Pat and Ian, this is Austin from New Jersey. I have a comment and a question.
Uh-oh.
Mainly for Pat.
Uh-oh.
First off, the NES guidebook, I love it, but you broke my heart giving Castlevania 3 only 4.5 stars. Really, bro?
Well, I didn't review that one, but you complain about a 4.5 star review. I mean, that's excellent. But okay.
I think I reviewed that one. I think.
Did you? How dare you, Ian? Give it not a sterling 5-star review.
Anyway,
great game. It's also super difficult.
My question is: how do you think these will happen in order? Will the Mets win the World Series? We hear anything about Metroid Prime 4, or Tommy Tallarico admits that he ripped people off with the Amico?
Tommy Tallarico is a classic narcissist. He'll never admit wrongdoing or the fact that he did something wrong. So that's never going to happen unless he goes through a lot of therapy. I'm not saying this to be unkind, but he has to go through a lot of therapy and sort of find himself in order to change that. The Mets are pretty good this year. The Mets are in first place in the East. They just got Jacob DeGrom back. First pitching today. Knock on wood, he stays healthy. The Mets could have a shot this year. I'm not saying they're going to win World Series. What was the third option? Oh, Metroid Prime 4. Nintendo will probably do another Direct by the end of this year. I think that game is probably still 2 years away. Being that they had to restart it, I don't think we're seeing Metroid Prime next year.
It might be on the Switch Plus. Switch 2 at this point.
Well, no, they'll have it on this console. But I mean, like, I don't know. Unless they've done a lot of work the past couple of years since they restarted it, I think we're probably at least, I'd say, end of next year for Metroid Prime 4. Then again, what's the big holiday game for Nintendo? They usually have like the one big holiday release.
Zelda.
Oh, Zelda? That's okay. Then
well, and they said that's going to be like early next year, but I think that was supposed to be their big holiday game.
Okay, so then you don't need Metroid Prime 4 until at least end of next year. If we get it.
Hey, Patty, and this is Cindy from Tacoma, Washington. I recently picked up the adapter for my Retron 5 that allows you to play Master System games. I'm curious as what your opinion is on Sega Master System games that would be easy to get into and won't break the bank. We'll say games that are $20 or less. Thanks, and have a nice day.
Not a lot of Master System games that are $20 or less anymore, and those will be the ones that are less interesting.
Vigilante should be reasonably priced, and it's a fun game. I like it. I do. It's a fun game.
Oh, get the turbo version. There you go.
Yeah, I have the turbo version. But he's not asking about turbo. Ah, he's asking about...
Hey, I'm asking if you don't get the great voice samples. Ah, come on.
Okay, that's true. True.
You're saving your girlfriend Madonna. Madonna is your girlfriend in that game. Anyway, under $20 is even like the quote-unquote common ones like Shinobi and Afterburner an Outrun under $20 on a Master System anymore? Like, yeah, that's probably it.
I don't I don't know. Transmod is kind of fun for.
Is it for a card game?
Yeah, for a card game. I don't think Double Dragon or Rampage are like crazy expensive yet.
Outrun's under $20. Get Outrun. Get Outrun, even though there's no like a lot of sound effects. You get the awesome music. Well, as awesome as going to be in the Mesh system. Battle Outrun, that's the one that's hard to find. I always forget about that one. All right.
You can get Rampage Loose for 20.
Loose?
Yeah.
That's the one I had. Wow, it's that much money? That's quote unquote a more common Master System game. What is something like Shinobi going for then? That's gotta be under $20. That's the most common thing. Shinobi's
Double Dragon, Loose, even Complete. Box system, no manual, $15. So you can still get Double Dragon for relatively inexpensively. And
Shinobi is going to be $25. You can probably find it at a store at a show for under $20 for that. Oh my God, Master System stuff has exploded in price.
Shinobi is missing levels too.
Shinobi Worlds $190 our best offer. Holy crap, that was expensive. That was $60 when I was collecting.
Yeah.
What's the other? And then this, I don't know much about the sports games. I'm sure they're average. You know, I don't think Masters was known for their great sports games, but you know they did have Joe Montana later on. Check out how's their ice hockey game? How's their pro wrestling game? I never played it. I don't know, but those are cheap. Usually, those sports games are pretty cheap, under $20 for those.
Hey, Pat and Ian, Mike from Chicago,
Mike
here. Recently, the Switch had a sale on a number of games, so I bought the Sega Ages version of Phantasy Star. I'm curious what your experience has been with Phantasy Star 1 through 4. How would you guys rate each game that you've played? Thanks a bunch.
Ian, how would you rate them? I haven't played them.
It's an RPG series that I haven't really touched. I was really into Phantasy Star Online, but that's a whole different thing. I have played the first one, specifically the Sega Ages release on the Switch, and it's fucking fantastic. Like the quality of life features, the mapping, all of that. Probably the best way to play the game. I did try to play it on a Master System once, and I did try to play it on a Game Boy Advance once. Switch is the time that it really stuck. I think the theming and the characters and the world is cool, but I haven't played 2 through 4, and the time period where I could play a lot of RPGs is long gone. So I don't know that I'll ever really get to experience them.
Hi, Pat. Hi, Ian. Paul from Detroit. I was wondering if you ever thought about having a loot box as part of a Patreon tier. Could have enamel pins, stickers, a bag of chips. I mean, it was a lot of fun in a dream I just had where we all met at a library to open them. Keep up the good work. Thank you, guys.
Okay, that was fine until the dream thing. That got weird. I don't think you're allowed to do like a sort of raffle thing for rewards or benefits on Patreon. Like, we do have the enamel pin, which Ian didn't mention. I don't think the enamel pins here, or I'll mail you an enamel pin, but that's like a specific item that you get. When I did my three DVD Kickstarters back like now, like, wow, like 9 years ago, I did have a tier where I give you a mystery box. So you got the DVD, then you got like a mystery box of like 10 or so games for a certain price from my extras. So that was fine. But I don't think you can do that on Patreon. I don't think you're allowed to do that. Well, you throw some chips in from Ian, like some Ian candy.
I think it would be fun, but I think we would run out of stuff pretty quick. I have no idea like how people like Dinosaur Dracula does it. He puts them out like monthly, and he's always got cool stuff in there. I think everyone gets the same thing, though, so maybe that's how he can do that.
That's more like a loot crate thing. That's sort of
And I think that's what this guy was more.
I
think that's what he was meaning, not so much a loot box, a loot crate, because other people do that.
They do that. Okay, but it has to be the same thing.
Sourcing the stuff for it has got to be pretty difficult. I think someone like Dinosaur Dracula is. You know, he's naturally looking for this stuff anyway, because that's his hobby and that's what he focuses on. So he probably comes across these things that he can buy in bulk to put in these crates.
And that's offered on the person's Patreon?
I don't know if that's his Patreon or not, but I know he does them.
Hey, Pat and Ian. It's Jason from the Nerd Cave Retro Show. I sent a voice message a couple of weeks ago about the VHS tapes. And then a week later is when the news for the VHS stuff broke. And now I'm thinking, well, hell. What can I collect that's not going to turn into a big shit show? What do you guys think? Love the show. Keep doing what you're doing.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff that hasn't turned into a quote unquote shit show. It's just that the more popular, has Pogs ever turned into a shit show? I don't know. I'm sure people are grading Pogs at some point.
Anything that gets popular enough is going to get some unsavory characters in there, and it's not going to, you know, it could change it from a purely, you know, enjoyable pursuit into one that money gets into. I think there's not a lot you can do to stop that. As far as like hobbies that aren't like that now, I don't know. And if I did, I don't know that I would mention them, because I don't know that I'd want people rushing to, you know, suddenly try to monetize it.
I will die in the hill that VHS tape collecting is ever going to take off, because we don't have fond memories watching VHS tapes in general. I certainly, we liked watching the movies, but the VHS experience was trash.
You know what? CD collecting right now, relatively inexpensive. I've got a couple friends who are loving it at the moment and picking up all sorts of great albums for 99 cents, $1.50.
There you go. Rip them to MP3s like the old days. You don't have to like go on the iTunes store and get them. You know?
Right, and get all the stuff that's not on your various streaming services.
Frank's been ahead of that curve forever then, because Frank buys that stuff that like I had to like import a couple he couldn't find. Yeah, I want this one. It wasn't available in the U.S. I had to import it, you know, for him. There's stuff like that. I'll do a few more here.
And this is Kevin from Michigan, not one of those Kevins. But I just wanted to say that with the Amico and Tommy stuff winding down, I'm kind of hoping Tony sticks around. I think we need the Guido Sarducci of gaming, and that seems like our guy right there. Thanks, guys.
We'll see if Tony checks in. We'll see at some point.
So it's probably safe to say that Ian's had at least a few negative experiences working as a game store employee.
A few.
But I'm curious about if either of you have ever had any particularly negative experiences while on the other side of the counter as game store customers. Thanks.
I'm trying to remember if I had something that was really out of line when buying something at a game store. In general, I would say no. I'm trying to think if there was ever a dispute or like maybe like a, like, here's the thing, usually in a game store, if the stuff isn't priced, you ask for the price and they'll look it up or whatever. There was a record store nearby to us that the person got into video games when they realized they're popular, and it was a nice guy, and would price stuff out, and it wasn't really, even if I thought something was overpriced, it wasn't ever going to get heat. I said, it's a little bit too much for me. Yeah, it's like, you know, I think you can do a little better. And, you know, you joke about it. You come to an agreement, you know. But it was never something like with vitriol or anything like that. I don't know. I don't think it's ever – I guess I know there's probably some stores out there where there's bad luck. But I don't think I've ever encountered them that were always bad.
I walked into a video game store here in San Diego once. And the owner was behind the counter wearing a bathrobe and eating SpaghettiOs out of a can. And when I asked to see a game – he pulled the game off the counter, off the back wall, and turned it around and held it up to me and wouldn't let me hold the game.
So my game, Ravian?
I was going to drop that at the end. The name of this video game store is Game Rave, and I don't recommend anyone ever go there.
They always sell at Comic-Con, and they're always stupid expensive.
They're insanely overpriced at all times.
So when I first moved to San Diego, I checked out all the local stores, which was literally, it was like three. There was one up in Claremont that's no longer there. They went out of business, I think, like 10 years ago. I remember that one. It was like, I think it was a chain. I checked out Luna Video Games, one location at the time that I checked out. I checked out both. And then I went to Game Rave. I'll never forget it as long as I live. This is 2008. It was like $80 on Super Dodgeball. That game in 2008 was worth more, I'm being generous, $15 at most. Back then, maybe 20 back then. It was,
I think we charged 20 for it, and it was one of those ones where it was so popular it had like a popularity tax, but if you want it online you could probably get it for 15.
It was one of those things where I just looked at it like, wow, this is how this is gonna be, huh? We're just gonna like overprice everything just to do it. It might have been 60, even so, that's still insane. It's like triple the value of what you should ask for that.
I definitely saw it for 80 in there once.
Okay, so maybe it was 80, because that
was like the one time I was in there. I remember that being in the case, and it was, yes, like 80.
Like, man, were they thinking it was another rare game that was
no, they weren't.
it's never been worth $80. Only in the box. hasn't been worth $80. All right, we'll do one more here.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. Chris Taliaferro here, calling in from beautiful Maple Shade, New Jersey.
Tyler!
And this isn't a question. It's me letting you guys know about a missed opportunity that you had. So, you guys were talking about the San Diego Zoo recently, and then Pat goes, oh, is this going to be a zoo podcast? And at no point did either one of you say the Sea Zoo podcast. It was right there, guys.
Chris, I guess we're not as clever as you. What can I say? You know, we sometimes we're not perfect. The pun didn't come to our heads right away. That's why we have you, Chris, in Maple Shade, New Jersey, to catch these gems that fall through the cracks.
Chris, I feel the shame. I feel ashamed.
Okay, there's just some more from Chris here.
Whoa, it's the Sea Zoo podcast. Night Zoo's cool. Whoa, it's the Sea Zoo podcast. I really like Night Zoo.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye.
You're welcome.
No. I'm not thanking you. Don't ever thank him. Good voice, Chris. You have a very solid singing voice, not going
to
lie.
I would say it takes a lot of guts to, you know, sing into a microphone and send it into a podcast.
Very Pat-esque voice there you have. You have to work on your jingle writing. The Night Zoo thing, that was not – you have to work on the writing on that. But, well, okay. Well, that's one way to end this this segment for the week. Was it Sea Zoo Cast? I forget
the
already.
Sea Zoo Podcast.
I already forget it, Chris. Maybe you should fill in for me next week with Ian. All right.
Bye, everyone.
That's it for the show. Oh, he wants to just end the show entirely now after that.
You said we're ending the segment there, so Yeah.
We still have an outro to do, you know.
Well, when have we ever had
You've been not giving the audience a nice, good outro lately. I got to, like, pull it out of you.
Ending the CU podcast with you is like trying to get off the phone with a grandmother.
Wow.
It just keeps going.
Wow. Well, maybe we never just cut it off. Maybe Ian, you're the last person I'm going to talk to for the day, and I feel lonely. You ever think about that?
You'll be talking to people in chat tonight.
What in chat tonight? Oh, that doesn't count. I mean, a good conversation. That doesn't count over text.
Sure.
I get texts from people all the time. That's not the same. A good hearty conversation with someone.
A conversation you could eat like a meal.
There you go. Ian. So that's our final T-shirt we're gonna do. The conversation
you can eat like a meal.
What was that for? Was that chunky soup?
Yeah, yeah, pretty much.
I like to have a good soup once every few months. Just it's on the shelf forever. I'm like, yeah. I should wait until we have a nuclear attack. But I'll have the soup here. It's been sitting here for 5 years and I'll eat it. And a good soup is nice. It's nice to have. All right, now I'm dragging out like grandma. All right, we'll see you later.
Bye, everyone.